Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with Richard Cassero. He's the author of Written in Stone, Decoding the Secret Masonic Religion, Hidden in Gothic Cathedrals and World Architecture. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news, and a big thank you to the listeners who supported the station once again. Here's a story by Ted Burnham. I think it's an NPR story. Geoengineered food, climate fix could boost crop yields, but with risks. Altering the upper atmosphere could block enough sunlight to offset the warming effects of climate change and protect food crops. But what are the risks? For a few years now, a handful of scientists have been proposing grandiose technological fixes for the world's climate to combat effects of global warming, schemes called geoengineering. Climate change has the potential to wreak all kinds of havoc on the planet, including the food system. Scientists predict that two variables farmers depend on heavily, temperature and precipitation. And those are already changing and affecting food production in some arid parts of the world where there isn't a lot of room for error. And if the problem worsens on a larger scale, it could do a lot of damage to agricultural yields and food security. At some point, governments may decide to, quote, do something desperate to protect our food and our people, end quote. Ken Caldera, an environmental scientist at Stanford University, tells The Salt. And that, quote, something desperate could be geoengineering. Well, as many listeners know, we've exposed what's going on with geoengineering and who's really behind it and the agenda behind it. It's being forced on to the public in a way that is in conjunction with a larger agenda. Some people say Agenda 21. The article continues, as many of these articles do, and that is, it's so risky, we don't know what to do, but if we really need to do it, we'll do it, but we're not sure, but if we need to, we will, and we won't need public consent. As many listeners know, we talked about Microsoft founder Bill Gates, who aims to end world hunger by growing more genetically engineered food crops. A philanthropic plan that may be gullible at best and destructive at worst, both to the environment and humanity. So, as many know, Monsanto and other biotech companies have collaborated with the Gates Foundation via the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa. But remember the geoengineering connection and the aluminum-resistant genetically modified seeds. There's another element here, and that's Bill Gates' father, William H. Gates Sr. He's been involved with the group Planned Parenthood, a rebranded organization birthed out of the American Eugenics Society. Gates Sr. serves as co-chair on the Gates Foundation, focusing on vaccines and GMOs. As more of us begin to learn about the use of occult symbolism and coded language in our midst, a greater understanding has emerged in how secret societies have infiltrated and influenced modern thinking. On this show, we've just scratched the surface on the topic with Jordan Maxwell and his lectures. Jordan has pointed out how there are good and bad Freemason-based secret societies. He's explained it several times, yet no one really knows what goes on behind the doors in some of these windowless lodges and temples. One reason for the secrecy is the age-old conflict of belief systems amid primarily Christianity and Freemasonry. And according to Richard Cassero's new book, Written in Stone, Decoding the Secret Religion in Hidden Gothic Cathedrals and World Architecture, the Masons who built the cathedrals and monumental architecture embedded their beliefs into the structures themselves. But it even goes further back in time than that. Richard Cassero also recognized that there are ongoing sinister agendas being formulated by secret societies. We touch on that, but we really dig into some of the fascinating parallels in designs of temples and churches that reach across time, from the old world to the new world. Some of this information could connect into the past few shows, but we shall see. Richard, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, this is a fascinating book, and I wanted to start off asking you, how did you uncover this triptych? Tell listeners what that is and its significance.
Okay, well, the world's most ancient civilizations, I call them the pyramid cultures because they all built pyramids, and basically I'm talking about the Egyptians, the Mayans, the Incas, and so on. They all shared the same religion or spiritual system or whatever you want to call it. The fact that they all built pyramids and created mummies and so on, that's evidence that they were all united in some way. They all shared the same wisdom. Aside from the pyramids, they also created what I call triptych temples. And that's basically a temple that has three main doorways at the entrance. A big door in the middle, flanked by two smaller doors, on either side of it. I found the first triptych temples in Egypt in the mid-1990s. And then I found them in Mexico, in Peru, Indonesia, and from there all over the world. So the fact that all the pyramid cultures built the same exact triptych temples is evidence that our ancestors all over the world all shared the same high religion or spiritual system, and that's what I put forth in the book pretty much. So the question is, what happened to this great ancient worldwide triptych religion, right? Where did it go? How did we lose it? The answer is it ended with the rise of the modern religions, and in particular with the rise of the biblical religions of Judaism and Christianity. Now, seeing what was happening at the time, a group of men gathered themselves in an effort to keep the memory of the ancient worldwide triptych religion alive. These were the first Freemasons, and they were a secret society, and for good reason, because if anyone dissented from mainstream Christianity or the mainstream Christian view, they had to answer to the Inquisition. So the Freemasons had a mission, and that mission was secret, and the mission was to preserve the triptych and the ancient religion the triptych symbolizes. And they did that, the Freemasons did that, by encoding the triptych into the churches, castles, and cathedrals that the church commissioned them to build. They were operative Freemasons, they were builders, craftsmen. So in my book, which is called Written in Stone, I show the existence of triptych temples throughout the ancient world. I decode the triptych's meaning among the ancient civilizations, and I show how everywhere it had the same meaning. The temples all pointed to the same religion. I show how the triptych was encoded by the Freemasons into the Gothic cathedrals of Europe, and in particular the Notre Dame cathedrals of northern France. And I show how the entire cathedral is a code that reveals the triptych's meaning. And finally, I show how the triptych graces the facade of modern secret society headquarters, like the Freemasons' lodges, the Skull and Bones tomb at Yale University, the Shriners Temple in Washington, D.C., and the Pythian Temple in New York City, and so on. And again, the book is called Written in Stone because I don't rely on history to prove my points. I rely on architecture, evidence that's written in stone. I rely on photographs of triptych temples that I've taken from all over the world. So it's not based on history. History can be tampered with, and it has been tampered with. History is a story written by the victors.
Great. I really I understand that, and I think the listeners understand the element of revising history. The triptych and the doorways, the single door, larger door in the middle, and the three smaller ones on each side have their own meaning, but the cathedrals, I thought that was really interesting. It becomes much more decorative, and there's a similar pattern, of course, with the ancient pyramids, but there are towers, and there's a reference to a higher self. And can you go into detail about what pieces of architecture in these churches correspond to these elements?
Right, yeah, great question. I mean, that's, you know, what the book does is I decode the cathedral facade. I decode the Gothic cathedral facade. And there's a series of Gothic cathedrals that were built by the operative Freemasons, and they're in northern France, and they're called the Notre Dame cathedrals. And what they have is two massive towers. Okay, they're twin towers, basically. And if you follow the towers downward with your eyes, they each end on the ground in two doorways. Those are the two outer doorways of the triptych, and they flank a main center doorway. Now, the twin towers have a meaning, and it's kind of hard to explain, you know, without showing you images and things that I have in the book, but The left-hand tower is actually the left and the right stand for the Jacob and the Boaz towers in Freemasonry, and those are the sun and moon towers. And all indigenous cultures looked at the sun and moon as opposites. The sun stands for day, the moon rules the night. During the day, it's warm, and during the night, it's cold. We associate the day with light, we associate the night with dark. A series of paired opposites. Those are the outer doors of the triptych. Now, the inner door is the center, the balance point, the number three, which is famous in Freemasonry. That's the balance, that's the middle, that's the eternal spiritual you, whereas the outer represents your left side and your right side. So the reason why the two towers are there is because they stand for the duality, the two opposites, and the middle doorway is the balance point.
I got it. Okay, that's new information, I think, to some people. However, I'm very familiar with the Twin Towers, the left and right pillar, the Jacob and Boaz. I've always wondered what it was and what the extended symbolism referred to. But it isn't the essential duality of the moon, sun, dark, light, night, day, and male and female.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right and left side.
Yep, it's basically saying how, you know, we're a microcosm. As men, we're a microcosm of the universe. And, you know, we have this light and dark in our world, and what it's there to teach us is that, you know, since we're a microcosm of everything that's out there, we have to look at ourselves and say, okay, well, you know, since there's a light and the dark out there, then there's a light and the dark down here in me, and there's that left side, right side duality. The question is, you know, the yin and the yang, etc. The question is, am I that? Is that really me? Or is that just something that I'm living in right now? And that's, you know, the answer that I put forth in the book is, that's the material side of us. But that's not really, you know, we're not really the material animal that we find ourselves clothed in. We're eternal spiritual beings. We're really gods. We just have amnesia of this. We're you know, we are a god. The only thing I mean by that is, I mean, we're a soul. You know, we're an eternal soul, that we've never been born and we will never die. And, you know, that's basically what the ancient Greek philosophers taught. It's what the ancient Hindus taught, the ancient Egyptians, the ancient Mayans. You know, all the pyramid cultures all shared the triptych. They all shared this belief, and this belief has been occulted or hidden by the rise of the modern religions.
Where it becomes a little interesting is the, you know, of course, the chapter that you had written in the book, God versus the Perennial Philosophy, references to Helen Blavatsky Theosophy and the Superman. And a lot of church or religious philosophy condemns that viewpoint as, well, that's you being a god goes against the monotheistic religion. However, you just pointed out that that's not what you really mean, is you being God. And you're saying you have an eternal soul.
Right.
Okay. Can you maybe elaborate on that just a little more?
Sure. Basically, all the ancient civilizations agreed on this point, and that is that you are not really the body that you're born into. You know, the body is just a vehicle. And again, this is not just my personal opinion. I've reached this conclusion because I've always been curious about this stuff. I minored in philosophy. I've read all the Greek philosophers. I've read all the Hindu texts and all the ancient Egyptian and Mayan texts and things like that. And they all seem to agree that, you know, we're born into this world, but we're only born into a temporary body, and that body changes. I mean, we were a baby, and then we had our teenage years, and then we become men and women, and then the body starts to grow old, and then it dies. So the trick is not to identify with the body. You're not the body. You're the soul that was born into the body. You are an eternal being. You have eternal life. In Egypt, that's what the Ankh cross symbolizes. It's the eternal life within you. And once you start to identify with that, then you start to realize that you are all powerful. You are all knowing. You are all, you know, but at the same time, you're not, because you were born into this body. Now, the cutoff happens where you realize, well, you know, I can do whatever I want. I mean, I can go and do whatever I want right now. I can take a plane. I can go here. I can go there. I can read a book. I could do. But so in a sense, I am all powerful. But at the same time, I have to breathe. I have to eat. I have to drink. I have to do all these things in order to sustain my existence. So in a way, I'm imprisoned also. So there's a duality there. What we need to realize is that we've been born into this world for a reason. Now, what was that reason? According to the ancient texts, we were born into this world to enjoy life and to basically, you know, have a great existence and have a great life. Now, what's happened? We have amnesia of this. We've lost track of this. We've lost sight of this. And exactly how we've been cut off from the eternal soul who we are. And, you know, I have my suspicions of what's going on, but I can't say for sure. But I know that in our modern society, I think I can point to two major problems that's interfering with that, and that's the big corporations that are teaching us to be consumer-driven junkies, and the mass media that's pumping fear into us and pumping fear into the society and making us fear and as a result hate and be aggressive toward one another. And even entire countries are acting like this.
We often talk about that on the show and related also to a particular frequency and resonance that is leveled on the masses of people, and that is the frequency of fear.
Yep, it's a killer. The mass media is poison. You know, the news is poison to us. And we have to really be careful. You know, we were all born into it. I was born into it, too. I mean, I root for the Giants. I grew up rooting for the Giants and, you know, watching the same shows that probably everybody else watched, and Happy Days and, you know, Three's Company and all these shows. You know, a lot of it is good, but a lot of the commercials that are there, a lot of the things that they teach us, they're cutting us away from nature. They're cutting us away from our true souls. They're cutting us away from the truth that, you know, we are eternal beings and we created all this for ourselves. And instead now we're imprisoned by what their system is. And their system is designed to keep them in control and to keep us subjugated. And that's the way I see it.
Well, indeed. And a lot of the listeners are profoundly familiar with this element, and that is the coded language being spoken among the groups that many have become aware, and how symbolism is used to manipulate the unconscious collective and imprison humans. Jordan Maxwell has talked about that. But you raised a very interesting point with the way the shell is being used in a prior conversation. And that was a pretty good example, and I'm sure there are many more. But can you tell listeners what that was?
Yeah, that was interesting. We had a good talk. You know, a lot of these big corporations, they use logos. And what a logo is a symbol that when we see it, we attach it to that corporation, and it's usually to positive feelings. Now, let's just take one symbol, and that's the Shell logo, which is Shell gas station, the scallop shell. Now, throughout history, shells in many parts of the world were used as currency for thousands and thousands of years. So what psychologist Carl Jung said was that we have certain archetypes, and these archetypes affect what he called the unconscious, what we have is a collective unconscious. And the collective unconscious is a part of every human being. It's like a memory that's installed in us just because we're humans. Now, we all have our own personal memories. We all remember things that happened in our own lives. What the collective unconscious is Carl Jung said that we as humanity have memories that not necessarily happen to each of us individually, but something that we as humans as a whole remember. And even though me and you, Jeff, we don't have memories of personal memories of using shells as currency, Carl Jung said that as thousands and thousands of years of using shells as currency has taught us as human beings, it's instilled in our DNA to value the shell symbol, to think of that and think positive thoughts, okay? So somewhere in our DNA, we see the shell symbol and we think, oh, that's good, that's money, that's positive, that's... So now you have this shell symbol and you have this major corporation who's using the shell symbol. And what it's doing is it's affecting not our conscious minds, not the stuff that we know about, but our unconscious, our collective unconscious mind, so that unconsciously we're drawn to that symbol. Now think of, that's just the shell symbol. We talked about another one, which is the Amoco torch. If you go to...
Amoco.
You know, yeah, the Amoco torch, right, which is another gas station, actually. You know, the big oil companies, etc. So the torch for thousands and thousands of years of human history before Thomas Edison was a positive symbol. You know, the torch meant light. It meant illumination, light in the dark. It went on to mean things like education, and universities used it and all that type of stuff. So there's another example of a very positive symbol that is drilled into our DNA as being a positive symbol that has been taken over by this big corporation who are now using it to attract us unconsciously.
That is fascinating, the way the memory encoded in our DNA, specific archetypes have been exploited as logos, and we don't even know why we drive up to these gas stations, and of course you need gas, or choose a particular bank. We know also that a logo like that is benign consciously. We're not looking at that as a symbol that, well, this is a better bank than this one over here that doesn't have the torch or a sun or whatever it is. However, it does get deep into the unconscious, and there are triggers within that. Carl Jung had dug deep into why we respond into that realm. As you know, for full disclosure, we should tell listeners that you're a Freemason.
Well, yeah, I joined back in 2000 because, as part of my research and part of my ongoing quest to uncover, you know, what really the meaning of life is, and I've been interested in that ever since I was basically 8 years old. I came across Freemasonry, and everybody was saying that, you know, George Washington and all these great men were Freemasons, and once you join there, you really see the light. And so back in 2000, I was a younger man, and I joined, and looking for, you know, thinking that everybody was good. All of a sudden, the veil would be lifted, and I would, you know, finally see what the meaning of life was. And when I did join, you know, great bunch of guys. I got to say, everybody was really fantastic, except for the fact that nobody knew what the hell was going on any more than I did. And instead of really searching for the answers, I'd say the majority are really there for social purposes and want to have a good time and hang out with friends and things like that. So I kind of got turned off to it, you know, in a big way pretty quickly, but I did remain, and I did stay on for a few years. I haven't gone in quite a while, actually.
Something did spark your interest here, and some of the esoteric learnings of Freemasonry is woven through this book and very critical. And I wanted to ask you, were you able to have access to information that a non-Freemason would have?
Not really. I mean, basically, with the internet today, everything is out there for anybody to do the research on and discover. What I did find was that there, you know, when you go through the system and the rituals and things like that, I feel, this is my personal opinion now, I feel that the whole craft has been distorted. There's semblances of truth. There are little pearls and little diamonds here and there that you're walking along and you pick them up and, you know, you see them and you match them up. But it's almost like, think of a jigsaw puzzle where all the pieces have been thrown up in the air and they've all fallen down. So none of them really make sense anymore. And my take on it is, if I look at the cathedrals, and this is what my book is about, I look at the Gothic cathedrals and I look at the triptych throughout history, I see that those Freemasons, they all had it. They all had the idea that we talked about before, the number three, the balance of the opposites, the eternal soul within, and that type of stuff. So I come to the conclusion that at some point, probably in the last 200 years, ever since the Founding Fathers, at some point, somebody went in and tampered with Masonry. Somebody went in and rewired everything so that it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense anymore. And the reason why I think they did that is because they don't want an empowered population. They don't want anybody to know what they know. They don't want anybody to be empowered, because when people are empowered, they're a lot harder to control and manipulate. That's the conclusion that I've reached. But like you say, in the book, there are examples of elements from Freemasonry that I match up with ancient symbolism and things like that. And I think, for example, the twin pillars, the Jachin and the Boaz, what are called in Freemasonry the Jachin and the Boaz pillars, that's a bit of ancient wisdom that's intact. You know, the sun over one, the moon over the other. You'll find that in every ancient and indigenous culture, the duality of the sun and the moon. So,
you know what, Richard, you also find that on the Ouija board.
Yeah, interesting, definitely.
I wondered about that, if this was also a portal. And I know that gets into a different realm, but it made me think about the World Trade Center towers and how they also represented the two towers, two pillars. And you get into the title of the book, The Two Towers, by Tolkien. He may have been a member as well. Often you see references to Atlantis or veiled references to Atlantis by some of these writers who are part of lodges or secret societies or have read the texts you have and studied the philosophy and put it into book form. But I do want to ask you this. You did write about how these Freemasons, the operative Masons who built the churches, who were not part of a particular religion or Christians, yet these were the churches that those who are Catholic or of various denomination went into worship. How are they able to encode their own Freemason belief systems into the stone of churches?
Right, without the higher-ups, the bishops and those people really discovering what was going on.
Did you think about that?
Sure, and I actually address it in my book. And at one point, you'll see that there's a certain point in history, okay, where the popes and the Catholic Church in general were all of a sudden turned off and really went after Freemasonry. So you have hundreds of years in history where the Church had hired Freemasons to build all the great churches and cathedrals, and they had a fantastic relationship until there was a certain point in history where it just changed overnight and they went after the Masons. And ever since then, the Church has been opposed to Freemasonry. Even the current Pope right now, Ratzinger, has, I think, 20 years ago condemned Freemasonry and said something to the effect of, you know, if you're a Freemason, you really can't be Christian. The two aren't compatible. And in a sense, I think it is true, but that's because I know, you know, or I think I know, or I claim to know, I feel like I know what true Freemasonry is. And, you know, the question that you asked was, how did they do this without anybody knowing? You know, the way I see it is it's possible that there were bishops and cardinals and things like that who really were Freemasons, who really did know and understand, and who in many ways cooperated with the Freemasons and wanted to keep the triptych wisdom alive, who wanted the ancient worldwide wisdom of our ancestors to survive Christianity, to live on. They wanted to pass the torch on to the younger generations because the wisdom of the triptych is so important that they didn't want it to be lost. And if you ask many, many people throughout the world, you know, Christianity has a lot of good points, but it also, according to many people, is a distortion of the ancient worldwide religion. And just to give you an idea, the ancient worldwide religion could teach that you have a Christ within you. You are a Christ. That's your soul. That's your God within. You are a Christ. You have the Christ within. You just have to chisel away the outer layers of vice and superficiality and anger and greed in order to find that Christ within you. Jesus did that, and he found his Christ within. We have to do the same.
Isn't that the direct opposite of Christianity, where they say you surrender yourself to God?
Right, it is, exactly.
So that's about a polarity.
Yep, and that's where the two differ. You know, one of them teaches the Christ without, and one of them teaches the Christ within. And you have, you know, a complete different doctrine right there, and that's where the split happens. And according to, this is my research, this is just an opinion, so I don't want anybody to get upset with me, but this is how I feel. The idea of taking that Christ within teaching, which you find everywhere in the ancient world, and turning that into, you know, that guy over there is the Christ. Follow him. Do what he says. Do what he does, or you're going to go to hell. You know, all of a sudden, you have this fear system, and there's a boogeyman in it. And if you don't follow the system, you're going to go to hell, and you're going to be in eternity and burn and suffer for the rest of all eternity. Well, then all of a sudden, they got you. Then all of a sudden, you're a follower, and then all of a sudden, you're able to be led. Whereas with the ancient system, the triptych system, and the system, and by the way, this is a form of Gnosticism also. The Gnostics were the forerunners of Freemasonry. Gnosticism, the word gnosis means knowledge, knowledge of the Christ within you. When you have this knowledge, you're not afraid because you are the God. You are the power. You are the eternal being. and you're here because you have to take off those outer layers of animality, of, you know, of superficiality. You have to find your true self.
Richard, in that process, isn't that the story of people's lives, and they would need help from praying to shed those animalistic tendencies or vices?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, some people are further along than others, you know, just like anything else. And sometimes you need a simple system in order to teach people a more complicated system. And I think that's why in many senses, you know, Christianity is a positive thing. It's a positive force. People do behave well. And it's just that it could also be used by negative people in a negative way. And I think that if you look through history, that's also what's happened. So you have the good and you have the bad as well.
Absolutely. Not all secret societies are benevolent or benign, and could you talk about the nature of corruption within these groups, and then we'll get back into your research.
One of the things that really makes me sure about myself when I talk about the triptych and the Freemasons and all this is, again, if you look in my book or on my website, www.deepertruth.com, you see that all of the secret societies in modern times have triptych entrances on the facades of their headquarters. And that's fascinating, because here I have not only uncovered the fact that all the ancient pyramid-building cultures built triptych temples, but also all the modern secret society facades are triptychs. And I'm talking about the Freemasons. I'm talking about the Skull and Bones triptych on the tomb in New Haven, Connecticut at Yale University. I'm talking about the Pythian Temple in New York City. The Knights of Pythias were a secret society. And I'm talking about the Shriners facade of their headquarters in Washington, D.C., a very clear triptych. You'll find all that in my book and on my website. Now, your question was, talking about the negative side of these secret societies. The way I see it, all of these secret societies, just like Freemasonry, you know, they all started for a positive reason. They wanted to continue the ancient worldwide wisdom of our ancestors, which has been stolen, which has been hidden from us in modern times. They wanted to continue that wisdom into the modern world, and that's what they were established for. Now, at some point, I feel somebody went in there and messed around with the wires and changed things up. And I think in many ways now, in modern times, to this year, you know, this past several decades, you have a more corrupt system.
I just want to say, for the record, a lot of the listeners already know about Skull and Bones, and we've had Chris Milligan on, who wrote extensively in his book fleshing out Skull and Bones, and naming the people who were involved, and, you know, they just automatically get this elevation in life, a lot of money, absolutely stellar connections in business, and one of the sources of corruption was the opium trade that was connected and linked to Skull and Bones. Just for the record, I wanted to mention that, and it's all out there to dig into and research. But we're at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to go to a quick break. Are you ready to take calls?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, if you have any comments or questions for Richard Cassaro, author of Written in Stone, please call us at 212-209-2900. And we'll be right back after this break. You're listening to In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Our guest, Richard Cassaro, author of the book Written in Stone, is with us, and we're going to take your phone calls. We have a call right now. It's Ed on the line. Hi, Ed.
Hello.
Go ahead, Ed.
How you doing, Jeff?
Good.
Just want to end good evening to your guest. I just wanted to say two things. But first, real quick, I mean, I missed the show. I really enjoy this show. I listen to a lot of radio, and I think you do this type of radio very well. And that's why I donated.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Yeah, no problem. But as far as Christianity, I just wanted to make a correction, because my father is a theologian, and I have studied Christianity. And to be totally honest with you, Christianity is similar to the Coptic religions in the true message that Jesus was preaching, which basically was to accept the Lord and to change within yourself through prayer and the power of the Holy Spirit after he transcended. It's not a religion of following. That the religion became distorted specifically after Constantine, one of the last emperors of Rome, had the bishops at the Council of Nicaea, and wanted to convert the whole Holy Roman Empire to Christianity. And that's where the distortions came in. That's where the idolatry and the rewriting of the Gospels came in, because there were several Gospels. There were the Book of Enoch, there was the Book of Adam, and there were several Gospels. And in those Gospels, it talks about self-transformation and accepting the power in oneself through the power of the Holy Spirit, not an outside force that converts you. You must repent and convert yourself.
Okay, Ed. Richard, what do you think about this?
Yeah, he's right. I totally agree. You know, if you look at what Christ said, you know, if you read the Gospels and you look at just what he said, it's very powerful stuff. And a lot of the negativity that I talked about earlier about Christianity is the changing of the message by people who have their own personal agenda for whatever reason. So, yeah, I think Ed is totally right.
Yeah. And just basically, as far as the ancient religions that you're speaking about, Freemasonry and things of that nature, who specifically can you identify that went and changed around the ancient teachings and the ancient doctrines? I mean, because I've always heard that someone changed this or someone changed that, and a lot of it is just ritual performed by people who don't really understand the meaning behind it anymore. Who specifically went in and changed it? Because I know that the Roman Empire had a lot to do with changing the true meaning of Christianity and what it was driving at. But who specifically changed those ancient teachings and doctrines and took the meaning out of the ritual and just turned it into basically ritual?
It's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, it is a good question, and I really can't identify and tell you who changed it. But what I can tell you is that you know, there was an ancient universal religion. It was practiced by the Mayans, the Egyptians, and Romans and Greeks and a lot of other ancient cultures. And, you know, the pyramids being the same all over the ancient world, the triptych temples being the same all over the ancient world, those are identifying features of the universal religion. You hear of a lot of library burnings, the burning of the library at Alexandria and things like that. You know, you see ruins, you know that the Christians went in, the early Christians went in and did a lot of damage. You hear of the Inquisition, you hear of entire groups of people like the Druids and the Celts being annihilated by Christians and things like that. So if I had to point the finger at anybody, I would say Christians. But if you ask me for a specific group of people, Christians would be the answer.
Well, not so much the Christians under the influence of the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I believe, because the true Christianity, first of all, it was not called Christianity, it was called the Way. And that's what the initial religion was called. It wasn't called Christianity until after the Council of Nicaea with Constantine and those bishops, because they saw that it was having an effect among the people, and they wanted to be able to control the people in mass by adopting the religion and mixing certain elements of paganism and other things to make it a wholesome or all-around religion for the Roman Empire. But there have been a lot of changes but the true message still comes true, that transformation comes from oneself and not from outside, it comes from inside. And that the basic tenet of being here is to help your fellow man. And that's how you rise above. So I believe you reach the next level. But that message has been just totally lost within even the modern-day religions. It's ridiculous.
And that's what Richard has pointed out in his book, that it was encoded in stone throughout the ages. Ed, I really appreciate you elaborating on this. It's a fantastic call once again.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Ed.
Yeah, thank you.
We only have one phone line, and I believe we only have one phone line working, but the number is 212-209-2900. And on your website, Richard, you had this other page about how certain food or things correspond to help particular organs in the body, like the kidney bean helps the kidneys. I thought that was fascinating. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, that's the ancient doctrine of signatures. It's it's an ancient wisdom that on the website I say that is being hidden in modern times, and basically all it is a lot of people, even modern day herbalists and you know, things like that, but ancient peoples, they saw in the doctrine of signatures a link between the shape of a food and the body part in the human body, basically. In a nutshell, let's say kidney beans, because they're shaped like the human kidney, it's believed that when you eat them, it's good for your kidney. Let me see, what else is there? There's if you cut a carrot, the cross section of a carrot looks just like the human eye, and we all know that carrots are good for your eyes. It's not just a wives' tale; they've actually proved it. A walnut looks like a little brain. There's a left and right hemisphere, upper cerebrums and lower cerebellums. Celery looks just like bones, and they know that celery specifically targets bone strength. What else was there? There's ginger. It looks kind of like a human stomach if you look at it in a certain way. And the Chinese have been using it for over 2,000 years to calm the stomach and cure nausea.
I'm glad you pointed that out. That's called the ancient doctrine of signatures. We have another call. Hi, you're on the air with Richard Cassaro.
Is it me?
Go ahead, caller. Yes, it is.
Yeah, hi, yeah. I've been reading a lot of books having to do with pre-cultures, for instance, prior to the kingdoms of the male, like Abraham. There were female temples in islands of Greece where the females were the gods, and the first temples were to females, and that was from the moon. You know, the moon was symbolic of the woman. But what your friend was saying, the one previous to me, they knew all about herbal things because women were the gatherers, and they understood plants, and they taught it to the others. But if you really go far back, you notice that most cultures go through periods where the men become no more hunter-gatherers, but they are warriors, meaning they had to kill animals and develop weapons. And I see the development of the Christian mythology where the male conqueror or the builder of a temple, they became powerful, because in the Roman Empire, Roman soldiers did the building of walls, so they didn't only shoot and conquer, they built castles, and the castles was the booty of the rich people. And in that system, the males had power that females no longer had anymore. They had to do it in secret, and that's how the myth of witches and kill them and kill the females. So it's going against the natural order of both being necessary, the masculine and the feminine. So that's all I wanted to say, but there are so many books on the occult, and that means the Masons also had female wizards. It wasn't just males, because prior to them being a wizard, there was a wise woman, like the concept of Sophia. And in Christianity, they don't accept that Mary was the equal of Jesus. She traveled with him, and in many religions, but not the Catholic Church, of course, it's considered taboo, that Mary was one of the disciples. And it wasn't the elders of the church, such as bishops and episcopals. That's how they reinstituted the male dominancy into the religion. They turned it into, you know, male conqueror, female secondary, mm-hmm. or calling her a witch and putting her to death to get rid of her wisdom.
That's right, caller. I really appreciate your call. And
yes.
Those comments are...
I hope it helps, because there are a lot of books you can read.
Caller, hold on. Those comments are very valuable as well. And we're going to go to the next call. I really appreciate that. Again, we only have one call or one line, so if you're calling, you're going to get a busy signal. So call 212-209-2900. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air with Richard Cassaro.
Yes, I have read about the beginning of Christianity and how it started. And the gentleman who called before mentioned the Conference of Nicene with Constantine. And, of course, the Conference of Nicene was in 325 A.D., and Constantine did not allow those people who resisted and did not agree with the theory. And Arius was one of the leaders of the external Coptics, because Christianity was created by the Coptics in Memphis, and they fought against it. There was never, I have read, there was never a human being by the name of Jesus. And there was never a Mary. And that was in the Conference of Ephesus in 431 A.D. They took down Osiris, the African mother and the child, Horus, and put up Mary and the child. J never came into the alphabet until 1635 A.D. that the child could be called Jesus. And so there are so many conflicting ideas. Flavius Augustus Piso wrote Matthew in A.D. 70. And between A.D. 70 and A.D. 140, all the New Testament books were written by Seneca, his cousin, and himself, and his successors after him.
Mm-hmm. Caller, I really appreciate you, again, elaborating. A lot of the callers are really getting in depth, and we need, you know, a couple questions for our guest as well. Richard, do you want to respond to this caller?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's great that people are interested, and I'm interested as well. I just want to just differentiate just a bit. The book is called Written in Stone because, you know, a lot of history, I'm very weary when people start talking about history, only because, you know, we all know history is written by the victors. We really don't know. We're talking about 2,000 years ago, 1,800 years ago. You know, look at just this past Iraq war. I mean, you know, was it really the era of liberation for the Iraqis? Was it really what they're claiming it is in the media? You know, I know that so many people have died, and you know, the Iraqis have just gone through hell on earth in the past several years, and we don't know where this is going to end up in 15, 20 years. They're calling it this great thing, this day of democracy and this great liberation, but in 100 years, 200 years, who knows what they're going to say about this time? And already they're making it out to be something great when in fact it was something horrific for a great deal of people who died and lost loved ones. We're talking about something 1,800 years ago, so it's really hard to say what happened when, and that's why in the book I stay away from history. The book's called Written in Stone because I look at a common architectural theme that I see throughout the ancient world. The pyramids exist throughout the ancient world. They're there. There's no disputing them. They're written in stone. The triptychs, the triptych temples, the three in one, they're all over the ancient world, from the Mayans to the Egyptians to the Olmecs and the Incas, etc. They're there. There's no disputing them. No amount of revisionist history can change that. And so a lot of what my research is focused on is what's called, like I say, written in stone. And that's what that's where really my area of expertise is. And that's what I try to, you know, focus on.
And the triptychs are also in today's structures. And those of you listening in New York City, please start to notice what's some of these older churches and buildings and have the three doorways. And
they're all over the place.
They're all over the place, yeah.
Rockefeller Center. Go to Rockefeller Center where they light the tree. The entrance, the main entrance, is not just a triptych, but it's a triptych that has the actual panels, a male on the right, a female on the left, and a deity in the middle, with a compass, a Masonic compass. So, I mean, there's a lot right there. That's the actual expression of the triptych. There was a woman caller who called just a couple of calls ago who spoke about how the man and the woman were the equal, and she's absolutely right. You know, before the Bible, I mean, the cultures all over the world, the men and the women were the equal. And in fact, the triptych religion teaches basically that, you have a left-hand side, which is lunar, and a right-hand side, which is solar.
And the secret is to unite the opposites, the yin and the yang. Put those two together and you have the whole. And when you can do that, that's when you find yourself. That's when you remember who you are. The word religion, religare, to bind back, to find your true self, your spiritual self.
We have another call. Richard, hi, you're on the air.
How are you?
We're good.
Great. Very, very inspiring and definitely divine and cosmic energy. I'm a high priest in the African and Native American tradition. I really appreciate you. I'd like to know, Brother Richard, how do you spell your last name? With a K or a C?
With a C, my friend.
Okay, C-O-R-O-S-O?
C-A-S-S-A-R-O, Casaro.
Very good. I'm glad you said universal, because a lot of people don't realize that the Mother, Father, God, which we call in the Kemetic tradition, which peoples the ancient Egypt, as Osea, Obatala, Oset Yemeya Lokum, and Heru Shango, which is really the equalization of the Jehusistos, okay? And so that 360 degrees of the Holy Trinity is very important. Now, one question I'd like to ask you, brother, is do you include in your book the Netaru, the Orishas, and the Santos, which is what the Catholic tradition is built on, their pantheon? But everything is one, just like you're saying. Unless you have Ma'at, you know, the laws of the universe, you don't have any really foundation. So do you include that also in your book?
Right, that's right. Actually, I have a chapter devoted on ancient Egypt, but the most I go into is basically the how the Osiris character of ancient Egypt.
Which is Osea. The correct name is Osea also.
Right, right. Uh-huh. He's his similarities in how a lot of their religion was focused on finding the Osiris within, which is sort of like in Christianity, finding your Christ within, your true self, your eternal self.
Exactly. Instead of separating yourself from the universe.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yes. Thank you so much. I appreciate
your
show.
Call.
My name is Mutshekem Amina.
Hey, Mutshekem, thank you.
Thank you. Hotep. Peace and blessings.
To you too, my friend.
Okay, thank you for that call. Call us at 212-209-2900 if you have a question for Richard Casaro, the author of the book Written in Stone. And I'm still fascinated by the doctrine of signatures. That is amazing, and I guess a lot of people already understand what's going on. And, of course, squaring the circle is another point that you referenced and we talked about earlier. We got another call. Hi, you're on the air with Richard.
Hi, great show, great knowledge. I'm very impressed with the callers. I hope I could talk all of them. You just say that there was a universal pyramid-building, religious type of worldwide connection. This hasn't been brought up, but couldn't these be ancient aliens? And how is it possible that the mathematical precision of the pyramids, not only just the outside, but how they constructed the inner chambers, is something that only points to such a higher level of intelligence that, you know, there's just no way. We still don't even understand the concept of the pyramids, but the fact that the Mayans had pyramids that are very similar to the pyramids at Giza shows you that there could have been, you know, aircraft that were of a higher intelligent being, and even the whole idea of religion was brought by extraterrestrials.
Sir, caller, your phone's cutting out, and I appreciate that call. Richard, what's your response to that?
Great idea. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, I started getting into this when I was very, very young. I'd say about 8 or 9 years old. My mom actually is the first one to show me how there were pyramids, not just in Egypt, but there were pyramids in Mexico and in other parts of the world. And at that young age, I think 3rd or 4th grade, there was a special on the air about UFOs. It was hosted by Bill Bixby, who was an actor at the time. He played in The Incredible Hulk. This was like the first thing, and I was so impressed by it. And my first thought was exactly what you're saying. I thought, is it possible that these UFOs are real? And is it possible that they came in ancient times and they communicated the same ideas to ancient civilizations all around the world? And so, yeah, I think that, you know, I kind of grew out of it, to be honest with you, because I started to realize, you know, having traveled to these places and you know, standing in front of the pyramids in at Giza for the first time, you know, you feel an otherworldly presence there. But you also realize that ancient people were much more advanced than we are today. You know, we've got it all wrong. We're not the sophisticated ones. Well, sure, we have technology, but really, when you talk about, you know, psychological, spiritual, you know, emotional, they were much more advanced than we are today. It's something that scientists and archaeologists would never understand or agree to, but you feel that when you go to these places of power. You know, that these ancient peoples didn't have the type of money system that we have today, where, you know, we're born and raised into a system where we think that the most important thing in life is to go out and make a whole lot of money and spend all of our hours in the day doing that. They didn't have that. They spent their time developing themselves spiritually, psychologically, etc. And the monuments that they left behind are a testament to that. And so, you know, to get back to your question, I think it's a great idea, and it was one of the first things that I was interested in, but I've kind of moved away from that only because I feel like men actually did it. Men and women actually built these monuments, and they did it, and they were able to achieve the level of precision and things because they were higher than us. They were more advanced than we are.
Can you tell listeners, once again, how to reach you and on that new book that you're working on?
The two websites, www.deepertruth.com is one, and the other is www.richardcassaro.com. And I'm working on a new book that basically is the circle, the idea that a lot of the logos, corporate logos, are circular, and the circle is actually a very powerful ancient symbol. You'll see it in the Aten of Egypt. You'll see it in the yin-yang of China. You'll see it in the Aztec calendar stone. And in all across the ancient world, the circle meant the same thing. It's a symbol of you. It's a symbol of your eternal soul and your godhood, basically. And if you look at a lot of the corporate logos today, I mean, Starbucks, AT&T, Radio Shack, Webster Bank, I mean, I have literally hundreds of examples. It just seems like the true meaning of the perfect circle has been censored or suppressed in modern times, and a lot of these corporations that know the ancient wisdom are taking that powerful symbol and using it to attract us to their products and to
manipulate our collective unconscious.
Right.
I mean, that's what Jordan Maxwell talks about and others, and I'm glad you're going deep into research on this. And I'm going to start sending you some emails of stuff that I see around that could be, you know, connected to what you're researching. So if you don't mind, I'm going to do that.
Yeah, Jeff, I appreciate it. That sounds great.
Excellent. Well, Richard Cassaro, author of Written in Stone, Decoding the Secret Masonic Religion, Hidden in Gothic Cathedrals and World Architecture. Thank you so much for being on In Other News.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate you having me, and thanks, everybody, for listening. And, you know, keep searching. It's out there.
Great. That'll do it for us this evening. We'll see you.